Gimmel 63, the title of the series, The Z-Theme Again.
Devin O'Neill was betrayed to Shaul by the Z-Theme. Let's just make sure that we have... Is it too loud if I just talk to the air conditioning?
Okay, damn it. Shaul and David had what can only be considered one of the most acrimonious and difficult relationships that two non-family members could possibly have. Even though we see in the Nach constantly Shaul pursuing David, it was divided by intermittent times when Shaul swore friendship to David. And everything was peaceful. But then Shaul would, his advisors and his friends, quote-unquote, would get him stirred up again about David. He had a severe melancholy and depression that Hashem had given him. And once again, he would set out, sure that David meant to betray him. So David had been hiding out near the Zephim, the people of Zeph. And actually, there is a Tel Zeph today still, which I believe it's the same place. And the Zephim went and told Shaul where David HaMelech was hiding, betrayed him. Shaul came. David HaMelech only escaped by the skin of his teeth, because at the very moment that Shaul had him surrounded, the Plish team unexpectedly invaded Eretz Yisrael, and Shaul had to take his armies and he had to leave. Of course, that was Hashem's doing. And David HaMelech was saved by that militarily there was no escape from his situation. After that, David and Shaul, so to speak, made up, and David convinced Shaul that he meant him no harm. But David did not return to Yerushalayim, because David was afraid that Shaul would once again lapse into the idea that David was out to betray him. And sure enough, that's what happened. David HaMelech is in the wilderness, he's out in the desert in Yehuda, in the area that's owned by the tribe of Yehuda. The Zephim are also from Shevet Yehuda. And as incredible as it may be, the Zephim once again send someone to tell Shaul HaMelech where David is hiding, having not learned their lesson. One of the things I was discussing with someone is who recently said to me, he said, you know, when I'm learning more and more Nach, it seems to me that not having learned their lesson is like a theme. And it is, because the only reason we have the Navi is to teach us that which we should be doing. So the Zephim went and they told on David HaMelech again. They told Shaul where he's hiding. So Shaul sent his entire army after David HaMelech. David HaMelech had a band of soldiers that were his army, so to speak. And we talk about David and his army and his men, but the truth is, if you look into what Chazal say, his army and his men were mostly people that were also fleeing for their own reason. It was sort of not really people who had joined up because we are super loyal to David HaMelech, but because, listen, Shaul's after us too, for whatever reason. I'll tell you what, I'll sign up. And they were won over by David Sidkis and his tremendous, tremendous personality, right, to be very loyal to David, but they did not start off as a band of people that David had trained as his army. They were people that were all sort of on the run together, and David was their leader. There were very few Talmid Chachamim in the group other than David. And he's in the desert. Shaul's army is approaching. It does not appear that there'll be a military way to escape. Well, let's remember that Eretz Yisrael in the Midbar around Yerushalayim is not exactly a huge area. Take 3,000 men, it's easy to surround somebody. So the Shaul's army is approaching. They're close to surrounding David, and David has no, they have no water. And not only is it a desert, but in that area there's a lot of saline from the waters there, and it's even more thirst inspiring than a normal desert would be. They're thirsty, they're very hot, and they appear to have no options as to how to escape from Shaul's army, which is approaching. That's the point where David HaMelech is when he writes Samach Gimel. That's physically where David HaMelech is. Spiritually, David HaMelech is not in the Midbar. Spiritually, David HaMelech's thoughts are only towards Hashem. And we're going to see that. Let's jump right in here. Verse 1, Pasuk Aleph says, Mizmor LeDavid, B'yoso B'midbar Yehuda. This is a Mizmor of David when he was in the wilderness of Yehuda. Now, interestingly enough, we've said there's two different kinds of things. There's a Mizmor LeDavid, and there's a LeDavid Mizmor. Mizmor LeDavid is when David is writing for others. For the individual, for Klal Yisrael. He's writing this to express his feelings. And LeDavid Mizmor is when he's writing to encourage himself. Now, in this situation, it sounds to me like he should be encouraging himself. The situation is very bleak, and they're physically suffering tremendously. The thirst, the heat, right? And yet he's still writing Mizmor LeDavid. He's still thinking and writing for Klal Yisrael and for other Yidden that they should learn from what's happening. Rather than turning his thoughts inward, he's writing for others. Chazal tell us that a melech always worries about his subjects and always worries about his people. You know, when you're the melech, it's not only your problem, but it's the problem of every single one of your subjects, at every single town in your country. The David HaMelech is so he's still writing Mizmor LeDavid. He's still writing for Klal Yisrael, even though he's in this terrible situation. And he says he's in a midbar of Yehuda. Now, last time when David HaMelech wrote about the Zifim, the first time they betrayed him, he said that he was in Zif. Now he says he's in Bamidbar Yehuda. Why not say he's in Zif again? The same place he was before. The difference is here, David is more concerned about the fact that he's isolated from his normal sources of inspiration. It's hard for us to imagine, but in those days, a person could go to the Mishkan and stand next to the Ark that had in it the Luchos that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from Har Sinai. And it had the broken Luchos. And there was the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. There were all kinds of hard physical connections to Matan Torah that a person could go to and receive inspiration. It's not just going to the Beis HaMikdash. You could go, you actually, now even though the Aron is in the Kodesh Kodashim, and according to most opinions, that only the Kohen Gadol could actually see the Aron when he went in, but you could be 3 feet away, 4 feet away from the Aron that had the Luchos in it. That's a good way, all right, to recharge about, get inspired. David HaMelech has none of that. And that's what he uses to inspire himself. In order to be able to write to Tehillim, he has to feel inspired. So he's saying, you know what? I'm not really in Zif. That's not my problem right now. My problem is not the Zifim. My problem is that I'm in the Midbar. I'm in a personal Midbar. I'm concerned about my own self. How can I continue to write? How can I continue to inspire my people when I feel so isolated from all of the things that usually give me chizuk? So right away we see a certain sentiment that most people can probably identify with. There are certain things in everybody's life that give them chizuk. When you're cut off from those things, it's very hard to keep up the chizuk. He goes on to say in Pasuk Beis, he's going to, the next four pesukim, David HaMelech is going to speak about how he yearns for Hashem. In Pasuk Beis, Gimel, Dalet, and Hay. In Pasuk Beis, it says, Elohim, Eliato. Hashem, you're my Kel, you're my God. Ashachorecha, Samcha Lucha, earnestly will I seek thee, Nafshi Kamalacha Basari. And my soul thirsts for you, and my body longs for you. I've printed out this translation from a place that offers this for free in this nice format. The only thing is you can see they use sort of an antiquated translation with the these and the thous. So we're just going to sort of substitute our own words. But this way I don't have to worry about photocopying any copyrighted material. This is a freely available source. So he says, Hashem, you're my God, and I want to seek you out. My soul is thirsty for you, and my body longs for you. That would be how we would say it in contemporary English. Now, Hashem, you're fight God. It's like saying, God is my God. As opposed to what? David HaMelech always makes sense in what he says, even if the language seems flowery. God is my God. Who should be my God except God? God is my God. Did you think someone else was his God? The statement doesn't seem to make any sense. But what David HaMelech is saying is that, you know what? You, Hashem, are the only person I can trust and depend on. The Zephim betrayed me not once, but not twice. And not only are they fellow Jews, they're my own tribal family members. My own relatives and cousins went and betrayed me and told Shaul. So you know what? Only God is my God, he's saying. Only thing you can depend on in the world is Hashem. I seek you. Now you'll notice the shorish of the word I seek you is shachar. So most of the Mephorshim say that it means to seek, but there are some that say that it's from the word shachar, like morning, like shacharis. And that really what it means that David HaMelech pursued Hashem eagerly each morning, early in the morning. And that every morning at dawn, David would renew his efforts to seek Hashem. So either way, it has approximately the same meaning, that I seek you, or I try to get to you early every morning, and I thirst for you. Thirst, why not be hungry? Thirst is much more intense than hunger. A person can be hungry for a long time, but thirst will drive a person mad. So David HaMelech wants to use the metaphor of thirst because of how much he misses Hashem. He's feeling cut off. He's feeling isolated out here in the Midbar. And he's thirsty, not just for water, but he's thirsty for some divine inspiration. Kamalcha Sari. And my entire body longs for you. The word kama, I really don't know how to translate that word. It's translated here as longeth, or longing for you. But it means a desire so intense that it's almost beyond description. And I really don't know what a good translation of that word into English would be. Longing for you does not do it justice. So I tried to think of a better English word, and I really couldn't. But so I'm just describing to you that if you can think of a word that means such an intense desire that it's almost beyond description, that's what the word kama means. And remember, he doesn't have even sources of inspiration amongst his own men. There aren't many Talmid Chachamim. They're sort of a ragtag group of guys that they're loyal to him, but, you know, not a lot of Chavrusa material. So he's cut off from everything and he's longing for Hashem. The Eretz Sea of Ayef, in a dry and tired land, B'li Mayim, where there's no water. I probably don't even have to tell you that B'li Mayim with no water means both water physically and the Mayim that we call water, which is tired. So he starts off in Beis about how much he longs for this divine inspiration. Right? And he's just desperate for some sort of additional connection to Hashem. And we're going to see throughout David HaMelech's life that that's both his greatest attribute and his greatest, biggest downfall, is that he cannot control his desire to come close to Hashem. Now that sounds like a good thing, and in general it is. But we'll see when we deal with inyanim related to Batsheva and other things, that sometimes a person can have such a strong desire to come close to Hashem that they can't control it. We just had Parshas Korach. Now, there's a lot of different ways to understand what was up with Korach. But one of the things that Korach did, so I still have to wear tzitzis. The tzitzis, you have to put a string of blue tefillis to remember Hashem. So I have this huge garment. It's all made of tefillis. Do I need tzitzis? Moshe Rabbeinu said yes. So most people say that Korach was just trying to make trouble, that he was jealous of Moshe Rabbeinu. But there are some unfortunate that say, you know what? Korach really, really was serious, in that he wanted to become closer to Hashem. So if one string of blue is good, a whole huge thing of Techelos must be great. And he couldn't control that desire to do things that he thought would bring him closer to Hashem. Now, lahavdil between Karach and David HaMelech, all right, but David HaMelech has that same intense desire that we're going to see throughout every kapitel, that he wants so much to have a stronger connection to Hashem in everything he does. And that's going to lead him to great accomplishments, and it's also going to lead him to significant failures. Because if you can't keep that under control and do it the way Hashem tells you, it's going to be a problem. Digressing a little bit, let's go on to Pasuk Gimel. Fortunately, I rarely digress. Kein b'kodesh chazisicha. I have looked for you in your holy place, liros zecha uchvaydecha, to see your power, your mightiness, and your glory. So, uzecha, your mightiness, refers to things like the Torah and the Aron HaKodesh that a person could go and get a physical inspiration from. That's uzecha, the oz of Hashem. The might of Hashem is evident for everyone to see. Uchvodecha, and the covet of Hashem, refers to the more intangible things like the Shekhinah, the presence of the Shekhinah in the base of Mikdash, and being able to get inspiration and having that sort of ephemeral connection to Hashem. That's called Kvodecha. That's the covet of Hashem. So David HaMelech wants both things. I'm trying to find inspiration, he says. I feel cut off. Maybe I can find inspiration. I want things like the Aron, that I can go and I can stand near the Aron, and I can feel the Oiz of Hashem, and also the covet of Hashem, the Shekhinah, and the presence of Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. He says, "Ki tov chasdecha, for your chesed, right, is better mechayim than life. Sfasai is ab chuncha, and my lips will praise thee." Your chesed is better than life? What does that mean? Well, who was very nice to David HaMelech? Shaul. Shaul let him marry his daughter. That's a pretty nice thing. Shaul had him living in the palace, playing music for him. Shaul was his best buddy. Now what's Shaul doing? Now Shaul's got an army over the next ridge that's intent and has got orders to kill David HaMelech at all costs. He says, you know what? All living things, their kindness comes and their kindness goes. Today they're kind to you, tomorrow maybe not. Only the kindness of Hashem can really be called a chesed. Because I know that your kindness is better than everything else in life. The only kind of chesed I'm going to praise is I'm only going to praise chesed that comes from Hashem. Shaul did a chesed, and now he's over the next ridge ready to kill me. Kein avarcha b'chaya, and I'll bless thee as long as I live. B'shimcha esach apai, and with thy name I will lift up my hands. So I will bless you. It means saying Kriya Shema, and lifting up your hands means davening. There's a lot of drushes on lifting up your hands, and very beautiful drushes. But Chazal tell us the simple meaning is that David HaMelech is saying, In his beautiful language, I will bless thee by saying Shema, and I'll raise up my hands in prayer and tefillah to you. Kimochela v'deshin, and then you know what happened. Once I say Shema and I dive into Hashem, kimochela v'deshin, it'll be like a hearty meal. Tispa nafshi, my soul is going to be completely sated. V'sivsei raninos. And my mouth, Yahalel Pi, will praise you with joyful lips. So once I say Shema, and I'm going to daven, I'll be inspired by you, Hashem, and I'll feel, my neshama will feel like it had a big meal. And my mouth, it'll be like tasting candies. Davening will be so sweet. So, you know, this is very beautiful. We have to also keep in mind that it's also very beautiful for a man about to lose his life and about to lose the malchus that Hashem promised him in the middle of the desert, who hasn't had anything to drink in 2 days, with a bunch of ragtag soldiers at his side who hopefully know which end of the sword is up, and Shaul HaMelech coming over to the next hill, and what David HaMelech says he's going to get inspiration from is the sweet taste of the words of the prayers. So now David HaMelech, for the next few Pesukim, will go on about that idea of being close to Hashem. Im zechartikha al yitzuai. When I remember you on my couch, on my sofa, v'ashmuros egibach, and I think about you in the middle of the night. So what he's talking about is that, you know how a person goes to sleep at night, and sort of right when you start laying down, you go to sleep, you're a little tired. It's sort of like a time when things slow down in the day, and you want me to turn that? Turn that on. Things slow down in the day, and you start reflecting on the day, your life, whatever. It's a time of, if there's any time in the day that can be said to be more conducive to introspection, it's that sort of time at night right before a person goes to sleep. David HaMelech used to do that, he's saying, on his royal couch. Now he's doing it in the middle of the desert. And Zachartikha al Yitzuai on my couch, and meditate you on my watches. Well, how many couches and sleepings did he have a night? Because I'll say this alludes to the fact that when he was running away from Shaul, he had to sleep in a different place every night. So even though I used to be able to lie on my royal couch, which was probably pretty comfortable, and now my couch is, you know, out in the desert, it's a different place every night, still, when I lie down at night, I love to take that few moments of time that's conducive to introspection and dwell upon Hashem. Ki ayisa es rosali, you've been a help to me, uvitzeach hanafecha arane, and in your wings I will rejoice. Your wings refers to the fact that he's happy that he's at least still in Eretz Yisrael. And that he didn't have to leave Eretz Yisrael. That Chazal Darshan from this capital, that David HaMelech feels that a person who has to live outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's almost like they have no connection to Hashem. That Eretz Yisrael, to live in Eretz Yisrael is so important that at least, with all these things, at least he's sitting here in the desert, thirsty, about to die in Eretz Yisrael. It could be a lot worse. He could be sitting there thirsty, about to die in some foreign land. Instead, he's in the land that's called the wings of Hashem. Davka nafshi achorecha, my nefesh is going to cling to you. Yitamcha yamincha, my right hand is going to hold on to you fast. Cleaving, davka, dveikus, a cleaving, is referring here to the fact that when you cleave on to somebody, it usually means to grab them from the back. To cleave on to somebody, dovek onto a person, means to see them, to grab onto them from the back. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu in the Chumash asked Hashem that he wanted to see Hashem. He wanted to see the true essence of Hashem, the face of Hashem. And Hashem said, you can only see my back. David HaMelech says, I want to achieve that too. Dafka nafshi acharecha. I want to cleave onto you. I want to see that same back that Moshe Rabbeinu saw. He goes on in Pasuk 10 now to address those people that are pursuing him. And he says, Vehema l'soa. Vehema l'soa. Those that seek, yavakshu nafshi. They come and they want to destroy my soul. Vehema l'soa v'yavakshu nafshi. They come to destroy my soul. Evo v'takoya aretz. And they'll go into the lowermost dregs of the world. This is what he's giving them. The people that seek him, that they should have such a terrible punishment of Gehenna. Now, I'm not sure, in the before Shemar and Shur either, whether he means Shaul, or whether he means the Zephim that betrayed him. And then he says, Yagiruhu al yidei charev, they'll be hurled onto the power of the sword, Menas Shalim Yihu, and there'll be a portion for the foxes to eat. They'll be hurled onto the sword, and in fact, Shaul HaMelech ended up being killed by a sword in the most humiliating manner. He concludes David HaMelech with a bracha. The HaMelech and the king, Yismach Belokim, he'll be happy and he'll rejoice in Hashem. Yishalel kol ha'nishbavo, and everyone that swears by him, will be glorified, ki yisacher ki dovre shacher. For the mouth of the people that lie will no longer be able to speak. Now, most people say he's talking about himself. And he's calling himself HaMelech. Now, if you were the military consultant to David HaMelech, having been hired by Boeing or whoever to come in and advise him of his situation, he's not really in a very good kingly situation right now. But he's still addressing himself as HaMelech. Right? Hashem said he's the Melech, and it doesn't matter how many armies are lined up against him and how much water he doesn't have, he's still the Melech. End of story. Only Hashem made him the Melech, and only Hashem can take it away. Now, there is an interesting shot. There's one person, this Sforno, who says that that's not what David HaMelech means. Even though everybody else says that's what he means. You know what he's saying on Melech? He's davening for Shaul. He's davening that Shaul will come to recognize the correct situation and will do teshuva. Saying that HaMelech, you know that king that's pursuing me? Yismach Belakim, it's a request that he should be happy with the Sham. Right, everyone will speak with glory for him because the people around him that are telling him these lies, they'll stop. One of the things that David HaMelech is always bothered by is that Shaul HaMelech had his depression, he had but he has generals. He has a whole staff of people. You don't sit around if you're the king and sit around all by yourself in the castle, right? And order up a car and take a sword and go out to war. You've got a whole retinue. You've got generals. You've got military advisors. You've got all kinds of staff members. And many of these people are tremendous Talmid HaChachamim. And not one of them ever stood up and said, Your Highness, I'm not sure this is a good idea. What is David HaMelech really going to do to you? Well, you didn't call him David HaMelech, I guess. What is David going to really, he going to really do to you? Nobody, not one person, ever objected to Shaul. So he's davening, according to the Sforno, that Shaul will get the glory that a king should have, and the people around him will stop with all of the lies and deceit that are resulting in the current situation of David HaMelech being pursued. That's the whole kapitel. 12 pasukim. He starts off, tells us that how much he yearns for Hashem despite his situation. Then he, for a few pasukim, tells us how beautiful it is to be close to Hashem, and that those people who are stopping him should have a curse, and he and or Shaul HaMelech should have a bracha. So now we're to the question of what is this about? I mentioned before, sometimes it almost leaps off the page with the point David HaMelech is trying to get. Other times, it doesn't leap so much. Because us in our time, so many years later, right, we have to struggle to figure out what David HaMelech is trying to tell us. David HaMelech here, I believe, is trying to tell us something very important. Very difficult to grasp. Everybody wants to love somebody. And I know that's just a song like that, so just forget that came out there, right? People are created with a desire to express love. Same way that Hashem expresses love to people. The only way, says David HaMelech, that desire can be satisfied and really bring you satisfaction that you have actually loved is for that love to be directed towards Hashem. Then it becomes a comma, an undescribable experience of the fact that I feel such a strong love for Hashem that it's hard to describe. How does one love Hashem? You know, how does one do emunah? Tomorrow when I sit down and I say have more emunah, what are you supposed to do? What are the steps you take? So if I tell you should love Hashem more, now go home. What is it? What are you going to do? How are you going to do that? Many times I've heard husbands say to their wives, if only you told me what to do, I'd be happy to do it. And the wives throw up their hands because they told the husband what to do 25 times. Right? I want you to help more around the house. Which means what? To the husbands. I'm trying not to. This is not a biased example, okay? This is trying to be a par-neutral example. Right? So the wife believes she's been perfectly clear. Help more around the house. The husband says, well, I don't see anything needs to be done. All right, what am I? So if the wife says, I want you to take out the garbage at 3 o'clock, and I want you to sweep the stairs at 4 o'clock, oh, fine, I'm happy to help. So I feel that since I often present, I've heard of people that present that argument to their wives, I should at least have the courtesy of trying to do the same, and that presenting steps that a person takes, what is David HaMelech trying to get us to do? We've talked before that David HaMelech, when he became anointed for the first time, he was 21 years old, he already was a tzaddik. He'd spent the first years of his life as a shepherd out in the field, becoming closer to Hashem. And someone asked me, well, how did he do that? What did he do? What books did he read? And I didn't answer the question at the time. But when you love Hashem, when you love Hashem, you appreciate what he does. If you love somebody, then you appreciate what they do. Everything they do seems wonderful to you. When you look at the world around you and you see all the trees, that is amazing. Think about trees. You put these little tiny windy seeds in the ground, right? You put a little water on there, and if you stand there long enough, you get 15 feet long roots that clog up your sewers, right? You get a huge tree that grows up, and the leaves, they come off and they go on, and what a system! It's just one tree. Now, if you love Hashem, you appreciate and look what he does and say, wow, that's really great. Rabbi Victor Miller, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, every morning when he would leave his house and walk to the shul, would think about a different thing to think about that Hashem did. And whoever was walking with him would hear it, and numerous people who've walked with him have told him the different things. For example, he would come out of his house, he would say, and he would look up and he would see, it's morning out. Oh, I saw it. Let's think about eyes. And all the way walking, he would think about how amazing the eyes are. You know, how it processes images. He probably knew more about eyes than I do, and how it does the reflection, and it comes in backwards, and then the brain puts it forwards, and eyes are an amazing thing. If you go and study the eye, that's an amazing thing. And then on the way back, you would think about something else. You would see a plant. Wow. Hashem makes it, and he would think about all the things Hashem does, how amazing and awesome it is that Hashem does those things. Not necessarily having anything to do with him. When you love someone, everything they do seems wonderful to you. I can't really compare this to the kind of love that, is for people, but to love Hashem means you appreciate and you're in awe of everything he did. And that's one of the things that David HaMelech did for those 21 years out in the shepherd field. Everything, he tried to appreciate what Hashem did. But that kind of love for Hashem means that you ever see a Gadol B'Torah, or maybe a Hasidish Rebbe, or someone who has a very deep avodas Hashem, dance on Simchas Torah. Dance with the Torah in some way where they're really being almost carried away. And you can see on their face that they love what they're doing. That is what David HaMelech is describing here. What David HaMelech is describing is that ability to close your eyes and say, wow, yes, Hashem, that is just amazing, Hashem. Come on, I can't even describe how amazing that is. I want to be closer to that. That's what David HaMelech is doing in the middle of the desert when he's thirsty and he's hot and it looks like he's imminently going to be killed. There's no reason to think Shaul will show him any mercy whatsoever. He's outnumbered. Saul's got a professional army, well-trained, well-financed. David's got some guys that are lending a hand, right? And they'll put up a good fight, but it doesn't look very good. So what does David HaMelech, what does a soldier away in battle, things look good, they think of the people they love. David HaMelech, battle doesn't look so good. He thinks of Hashem, because he loves Hashem. And David HaMelech is saying, you know what? If you love Hashem, then even in a wasteland, in the middle of the desert, Hashem never deserts you. Now, wasteland can be literal or a wasteland can be figurative. A person can be in a midbar literally. David HaMelech here is literally in a midbar. Very few of us are going to be in that dramatic of a situation in our lives. Most of us will not be being pursued by a king or a well-financed army. Most of us will not be hiding out in the desert. Most of us. Maybe a few of us will, but the majority of us will never experience that. But David HaMelech is saying, you know what? I'm telling you this because you all have your own midbars. Remember, David HaMelech didn't write this. This is sung from the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. You think about that. This is David HaMelech's most private, most innermost feelings towards Hashem, and they're going to be sung in a chorus with six-part harmony and instruments. On the steps of the Beis HaMikdash. Because David HaMelech is telling you, you know what? You all have your midbar. Mine right now is a real midbar. And it's thirsty out here, and it's hot, and a nice nace right now from Hashem would be really appreciated. But you know what? That's my midbar. You have your midbar. And you need to do in your midbar what I'm doing in my midbar. Which is, what's he concentrating on? You know what he should be doing? He should be in his headquarters right now, going over battle plans. Right? He should be drawing maps in the sand and, you know, and making sure, doing extra drills to make sure that the guys on the left know how to flank the guys on the right in the reverse military stuff. Okay. Yeah. I guess it would not be a chiddush that I did not ever serve in the actual military, but that's what you would think he'd be doing. He's got to be there. Saul HaMelech's right over the next ridge. We need a... He's thinking about his loved ones, Hashem, and how he can do something to be closer to his loved ones, and how he misses being close to the Aron, being close to the Mishkan. David HaMelech is saying, in your midbar, that's what you should be thinking about. Whatever your midbar is, everybody has their peckle. And everybody can say their peckle, and everybody's peckle is worse than the next person's peckle. The problem is, where does that end? But everybody has their own peckel, and everybody has their own midbar, and their own problems, and their own situations where they feel like the army's coming over the hill. Says David HaMelech, you know what? If you have a relationship with Hashem, where you love Hashem because you've worked on appreciating everything he does, you can always draw on that feeling. You can always draw on that incredible feeling that you have for Hashem, no matter what kind of midbar you're in. That's what David HaMelech is telling us. And you know what? He says, forget about people. People are unreliable. Don't sit out in your own midbar thinking, wow, I certainly hope so-and-so is going to help me. I'm certainly depending on the chesed of people. He says, put all that aside. Just focus on Hashem. Love is like that is something that is worked on and is a hard thing to accomplish. It took David HaMelech decades of constantly, every day, looking at everything Hashem created and trying to appreciate how awesome that creation was before he was able to come to this level of Ahavas Hashem. But that's love. It's not emunah. It's not tochen. Personally, David HaMelech could have emunah and bitachon. He could have bitachon in Hashem. He could even have histapkus, for those of you who were here last week. He could even have histapkus. Doesn't mean he has love. A person can be in a marriage their whole life and not have love. Not very good, but certainly possible. But love is a separate entity. And it doesn't come, it's not something that Hashem gives you as a present. It's not something that you get from your parents. It's not something, it's only something, says David, that you can work on so that when you're in your midbar, you'll have these feelings. And you'll be able to feel, he's almost like a tingle and a glow with the thought, the chizuk he gets from Hashem. And you know, I'll go back to the Aron someday and stand next to there. And it'll be, oh, it's a galdik. That's Avos Hashem. That's what carries David HaMelech through the Midbar. How does he survive this? This is not atypical. David HaMelech's whole life is like this. Now we think of David HaMelech as this amazing person. And it was this amazing person. Think of him sitting on his throne and dispensing justice and going around and doing all of the things that HaMelech does. He spent a significant part of his life in the Midbar, right, being pursued by this person or that person. Whether it was Shaul, whether it was sons that rebelled against him. He spent an awful lot of time in the Midbar. But he had his love of Hashem. He had that feeling. That, I think, is what David HaMelech is trying to tell us. And that love of Hashem, right, is something that is not just achievable by Jews. All goyim are commanded, one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, is to have a moon and a sun. Yes. Go ahead.
Explained exactly. I just thought they were Christians who thought this was very nice, or you know, follow these laws. But they're not Christians anymore. I didn't know that.
It's fascinating. I read an article about the same thing that you're talking about. I don't know if you're talking about the Noahide convention. There's people that want to be B'nai Noach. They don't want to convert and become Jews, but they want to follow the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach and be what the Torah has commandments for everybody. We have 613, and the non-Jews have 7. Those 7 have a lot of sub-chapters in them, so it's not quite as simple as it sounds, but they have 7. But these people want to do, they want to follow, and they figure that, you know what, why should only the Jews be close to Hashem? The terribly sad thing is, the same time Jews are running away from Judaism, there are non-Jews coming and saying, we want to follow the Torah. Teach us, and there have been books published recently on the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, because it's not something that comes up a lot. You don't usually go ask your Rav, by the way, I have a really important Shiloh today. Did I just violate one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach? Could you look that up for me? Doesn't come up very often. So even though we know what they are and all the rules, there's not like an easy book that you can go to one of these people at the conference and say, here, you know. So books are being written about, sort of as a compendium, a liquid of all of these halachas. In fact, when Shlomo HaMelech dedicated the Beis HaMikdash, one of the tefillahs he said, his main tefillah was that when anybody from any other nation comes and prays in the Beis HaMikdash, their request should automatically be granted. That Shlomo HaMelech davened that everybody in the world should come to the Beis HaMikdash, and if they did, Hashem would grant them their request. Interesting why he would do that, right? In the culminating moment of the Beis HaMikdash, and that's, we're not going to get too much probably into Hillel into Shlomo HaMelech. So trying not to digress. It's not easy for me. Because Shlomo HaMelech is a fascinating study in Nach. He demanded so much of himself and of Klal Yisrael, and both he and Klal Yisrael couldn't live up to it. And it's one of those small what-ifs that history hinges upon. What if either Klal Yisrael had been a little bit better, or he had asked a little bit less from them, what would have happened? But, wow, I'm digressing. That's David Amelo's point. He's only got 12 pesukim here. A few pesukim about his situation, a few pesukim about the incredibleness he feels of closeness to Hashem, and that he wants those people that are against this to be punished, and he and Shaul HaMelech should be the righteous kings, and that all of the people that are conspiring should stop this. And that's how he survives in the Midbar. So Melech, you want to survive in the Midbar? Here, I got a blueprint for you. Turn to page six. Turn to chapter 63. Read verse 1 through 12, and you can survive the Midbar. Okay. Any questions? Next week.